1st. It's less than a week until state electors cast their votes for president. President-elect Joe Biden and his transition team are moving forward with nominations for candidates for cabinet positions. Meanwhile, President Trump continues to claim without evidence that the election results are illegitimate. And the White House and Congress are again having trouble reaching an agreement on a COVID-19 relief package. It's the Week in Washington, where we talk about a bunch of top stories in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the picks that Biden has made so far for cabinet and other top positions? Do you like the names you've heard so far? Are there others you would have liked to see nominated? Who do you want to see nominated for remaining cabinet posts? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Amanda Turkel is Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost. Amanda, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's start with the ongoing saga of another round of COVID-19 relief spending from the government. What is the latest? We keep hearing signs that sound like, yeah, something's going to happen, and then the brakes keep getting put on. What's the latest?
Right. It's still not clear if anything is going to happen. The White House has put out a deal this week. It was for $916 billion. It doesn't seem like it's probably going to go that far because it has a lot of things that Democrats don't like. It severely cuts the extended unemployment benefits. It does, though, have stimulus checks for $600. Stimulus checks are incredibly popular with people on both sides of the aisle. What a lot more people are looking at now is sort of the best hope for a deal is this bipartisan plan that's being negotiated by a group of senators of Democrats and Republicans, Mitt Romney, Joe Manchin, Susan Collins, and some other people. That's $908 billion. That one still has some details to be worked out. That one so far does not have checks being sent to people. It doesn't have an extension of paid sick leave provisions, and it's not clear what it would do on the liability shield, which protects businesses and other organizations from coronavirus-related lawsuits, which is very important to Republicans, and Democrats don't like it. So there is a deal, a bipartisan deal being worked out. People seem to want a deal, but there are just these sticking points that the parties so far aren't coming together on.
And in addition to that deal, which could be the basis for negotiations that everybody jumps in on, there are outside deals being offered, as you mentioned, a separate one suggested by the White House, and then suggestions from Democrats and some Republicans for those stimulus checks. So, I mean, it's not even like there's one thing that everybody agrees is the current starting point that they're negotiating from. Is that about right?
Right. I mean, Democrats and again, some Republicans really want to see stimulus checks. But Democrats also want to see extensive unemployment benefits and quite a bit of aid to state and local governments. Republicans want to see are less interested in state and local government aid. Even ones who support it want to see less money than Democrats do. And there, again, is that issue of this liability shield that Republicans and Mitch McConnell particularly really insist have to be in a deal and Democrats don't. But there have been some signs that perhaps Republicans would be willing to give that up in exchange for some other thing. So, again, it's all moving and it's still unclear if there will be a deal.
And the stakes here include some deadlines coming up, ends to emergency aid programs, for example. What kind of things run out, I guess, if a deal isn't reached by a certain time?
We, like you said, we have that, unemployment benefits. And we also have the other deadline I think we should mention is the government funding. The federal government could shut down on Saturday. And this is sort of a separate thing that they're working on. They're trying to get a deal just to extend government funding by one more week so it doesn't shut down on Saturday so they can continue negotiating spending for the government agencies and also the stimulus deal. And obviously it would be quite bad right now for people if the government shut down.
We're talking to Amanda Turkel, Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Let's turn now to the Biden transition and cabinet appointments. And let's start things off with a caller on that topic. We've got Tom on the line in Madison. Tom, hi.
Good afternoon. I'm seeing a number of faces that we've seen before, whether they be from the Clinton administration or the Obama administration. And while their experience may be valuable, I think we need a lot more innovation, and we need a lot more handing some power to people across the aisle. I would much more have preferred Colin Powell, a Republican, as Secretary of Defense, or Condoleezza Rice, a Republican, as Secretary of State. It's only if Biden's administration reaches across the aisle and puts respected people from the other side in positions of power that he will then get the cooperation of, you know, the Senate and have the appearance of, you know, a diverse and responsible and bipartisan effort.
Tom, thanks a lot for that call. This is something you've been writing about a lot, Amanda, what we're seeing so far from Biden's cabinet appointments and other key announcements. Let's start with Tom's first point. Familiar faces, he says, from the Clinton and Obama administrations. How much of that are we seeing?
Well, we are seeing some of that. I think the most notable one is that Biden is set to choose Tom Vilsack to be his agriculture secretary. Tom Vilsack was Obama's agriculture secretary for all 8 years. And so a lot of people are wondering, you know, why give him the job again? Why not go with someone different, whether it's Senator Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota, or who a lot of progressives and Black lawmakers were picking, which Marsha Fudge from Ohio. She's a congresswoman who has quite a bit of experience on nutrition programs and low-income food programs. But it seems like Marsha Fudge is going to get housing and urban development. And, you know, I think, you know, Tom makes a point in that, I mean, Biden has a very hard job in putting together a cabinet that makes all the people who voted for him happy. He's trying to balance people who have experience, people he personally likes, which honestly, Tom Vilsack, I think, is up there in that because he and the Bidens are very close. And, you know, he has this left wing of his party that wants to see certain people in office. He has the mainstream of the Democratic Party. And then he has these Republicans or disaffected Republicans who voted for him. I don't know if we're going to see any Republicans in Biden's administration. There were some names floated initially that he might be looking at them. But I think, you know, if he picks Republicans or a certain type of Republican, he would face a lot of blowback from his party. And remember, Obama tried to, you know, Obama put Republicans in his cabinet and tried to, and he certainly didn't get any cooperation from Republicans during his time in office.
Tom, thanks for that call. And let's talk about two different constituencies here. As you mentioned, the Biden team needing to not offend, hoping to not offend the left wing of their party. But they may face a Senate, depending on what happens in Georgia, that has a Republican control that could stop or slow down all of his appointments. How are we seeing the team try to thread the needle so far on that?
Yeah, so it seemed like Biden for a while was picking sort of what we were calling a Goldilocks cabinet. You know, maybe they weren't everyone's first picks for people, but they seem to be making the party pretty happy. You know, you had his economic team rollout, which seemed pretty smooth. Progressives were sort of gearing up for a fight because some more conservative names were floated, but they were pretty happy with the picks, even if, again, they weren't the people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren might have chosen. Because, you know, Biden is going to have to pick people that, you know, like we were saying, that Republicans do like too, because there's a good chance that the Senate will be in Republican hands next year. We'll need to confirm Biden's choices. Republicans are already saying that they're planning to oppose Neera Tanden, who is Biden's pick to the Office of Management and Budget. And she's very active on Twitter and has been fairly partisan on Twitter. And Republicans are saying that they're going to oppose her. But, you know, again, if Democrats pull off wins in those two Georgia Senate races, you know, Biden's going to have a much easier job, but he can't bank on that right now.
Let's bring on another caller. Bob is with us in Westby. Bob, hi.
Hello, and thanks for taking my call.
What'd you want to bring up, Bob?
I would like to comment on Lloyd Austin's nomination. I certainly don't have any reason to not like his nomination personally. I'm sure he's a wonderful guy, but it seems to me that to hire somebody who spent his whole career in the military and his 4 years since on the board of Raytheon, I'm going to reveal my age here, just seems to me to be the personification of the military-industrial complex.
Thanks a lot for that call. Oh, I got. Sorry, go ahead, Bob. You'd rather?
No, go ahead. That's enough. That's...
Thanks for calling in, Bob. Sorry to step on you there. Amanda, this is, by the way, the topic of our 4 o'clock conversation today, all about that appointment and civilian and military control. But, Amanda, that's a topic that has been raised, having a former general not outside that window. He'd need a special waiver to become the Secretary of Defense since he's only been out of the military for 4 years. What's been the reaction there?
Yeah, a lot of people feel like Bob does. there are some Democrats who were uncomfortable granting the waiver to General Mattis to be Trump's defense secretary, but some of them did, thinking that he would be a check on Trump because he was such sort of an outsized personality and force and so respected. Some of them didn't grant the waiver and said, you know, I'm not going to do it going forward. But now they're starting to rethink that. Some Democrats still say that they're uncomfortable giving a waiver. Some say, like, you know, if Trump got to do it, Biden should get to do it too. Some are waiting to see. Some Republicans who granted Mattis a waiver are now saying that they're less likely to do so for Austin. So it's not clear yet how much this is going to divide along partisan lines and whether Austin will truly have difficulty going through. One thing that upset a lot of Democrats last time was that the House and the Senate have to grant the waiver. And last time, Mattis did not go before the House to testify, and they wanted him to. Normally, nominees don't, because they just need to be approved by the Senate. So I think this time you might see House lawmakers say that they would like to hear from Austin as well.
Let's bring on one more caller before we move on from the cabinet. John is with us in Madison. John, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. A couple points. I see a lot of really lukewarm corporate Democrats in Biden's cabinet, which I'm definitely not thrilled with, but he's much better than the alternative. Republicans always talk about being bipartisan when Democrats are in control, but anytime that they're in control, they have no interest in being bipartisan at all. And I find that really frustrating, and I think it reflects poorly on the Republican Party's character.
John, thanks for the call. John says, corporate Democrats, he thinks, but he prefers them to, I guess, a Republican administration, and he's not that open to calls for bipartisanship from Republicans, Amanda.
Yeah, you know, calls for bipartisanship usually, are self-serving. Republicans want bipartisanship when there's a Democrat in office, and Democrats want the same when a Republican is in office. I mean, and you know, to the earlier comment about the corporate ties, I mean, this is something that a lot of people in the party are watching Biden for. And, you know, that's one of the criticisms of Tom Vilsack, is that he's tied a little much to the agricultural industry. You know, I think a lot of people, though, were happy with his choices for his economic team, because they weren't people who come from Wall Street backgrounds. They were come from think tanks, academics, and sort of other backgrounds besides the financial industry. And that, I think, was heartening to a lot of people.
It's the Week in Washington. We're talking to Amanda Turkle from HuffPost. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you have more thoughts on the cabinet. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now we're picking up our talk with Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost, looking at some of the top stories this week in national politics. Let's turn, Amanda, to this military spending bill, the Annual Defense Authorization Act, overwhelmingly passed in the House of Representatives, but President Trump has said he doesn't like it. He has signaled he would veto it. First of all, what is his argument for vetoing this annual defense appropriation bill?
Sure. So it was expected to pass by a wide margin. It did. I mean, part of the reason that Trump doesn't like it is that he doesn't like their refusal to amend something called Section 230. This has to do with, I just wanted to bring up something because it was just distracting my attention a little bit. There's some breaking news about Hunter Biden that I thought you guys might want to know about. He is now, it's been announced that he is under federal investigation for his taxes. And this just broke a couple minutes ago, and it was sort of like popping up on my screen. And so I thought that was interesting because it seems sort of further, you know, the Trump administration and a U.S. attorney in Delaware seems to be sort of further going after Hunter Biden. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up.
Sure.
So your audience knew about it. So the reason Trump doesn't like it is he doesn't like that there is a part of this that protects social media sites from legal liability. Obviously, Trump has been very upset at social media sites. He feels like they are muzzling conservatives. They are muzzling him. And so that is something that he wants to get rid of. Lawmakers don't want to. And so he says that he will veto that. But it doesn't seem like enough Republicans would go along. It's not clear whether Republicans, it has a veto-proof majority, but it's not clear whether Republicans will be willing to go against the president to override a presidential veto.
And this would be, I think, the first time, if the president vetoed it, if Republicans went along with this, this would be the first veto override of the president, of President Trump. Is that right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's telling that, of course, it comes right as Trump is leaving office. They're a little bit less afraid of his wrath and his ire, although he will obviously continue to be powerful in the Republican Party after he leaves office. But, you know, the military spending bills are something that usually attract broad bipartisan support as well.
Talking to Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost. It's our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. We've got one more caller on the Biden cabinet shaping up. Marty is with us in Douglas County. Marty, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm wondering if you have any insight or let me know when Biden will be picking his Department of Interior Secretary. We are, along with a lot of other people who are much more prestigious than me, encouraging him to appoint an American Indian to that position. There's a Northern New Mexico representative, Deb Hyland, I think is how you pronounce her name. She's a member of the Laguna Pueblo, who I think is getting some pretty serious scrutiny. Any dish on that?
Sure.
Amanda?
So we have been reporting on the Interior Secretary battle, and it seems like Congresswoman Deb Haaland has quite a bit of public support. Native American tribes support her, and seem overwhelmingly to support her, at least publicly. We don't know when that pick is coming. We're thinking perhaps next week, but we're not certain on the timing. But you know, despite that public support, there's been some sort of anonymous Biden advisors pushing someone named Michael Connor, who's also Native American, who served in the Interior Department. He doesn't seem to have much outside support besides a few Biden advisors. We're hearing about Tom Udall, who's also from New Mexico. So there are a few names floating out there. There are also reports that Michelle Lujan Grisham was offered the Interior Secretary job. She didn't want it. She's a former Secretary of Health in her state of New Mexico. She really has no experience in public lands issues, and she turned the job down. It's not clear why it was offered to her. But yes, Deb Haaland is the popular choice for this. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether Biden is going to go with her.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last couple minutes, I just want to touch on the latest legal challenges from the Trump campaign and supporters. The U.S. Supreme Court rejecting a lawsuit about the Pennsylvania vote. What suits and what deadlines are you watching for right now, Amanda, in this ongoing saga?
Well, the Supreme Court one was big. Everyone was waiting to see what happened when a case got to the Supreme Court where Trump has, you know, picked three justices. And you know, no one even dissented. It was just one line, just rejecting Pennsylvania Republicans trying to block certification of the election results for Biden. Trump has repeatedly said that if it gets to the courts, if it gets to the Supreme Court, he'll win. And he just didn't. You know, there have been about 50 lawsuits filed. Republicans have lost at least 40 times in six key states. I mean, it's over for Trump. And I think everyone knows that besides sort of in his mind. There are a few cases left they're real long shots. The Texas Attorney General is suing. There's some, you know, sort of random ones floating out there, but none of them offer any real potential to block the election results and to block Biden from becoming president. They're sort of last gasps by like Trump supporters.
And we've seen Republican Senator Pat Toomey calling the Trump campaign now to overturn the Pennsylvania election, quote, completely unacceptable. Is there more movement among Republicans in Congress to join Senator Toomey, or are a lot of them still backing the president or holding their tongues on the issue?
Yeah, a lot of them are still holding their tongues. You know, you've seen a few people here and there willing to speak out. And I think I have to give a lot of credit to state officials who have been willing, you know, in Georgia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, who have been willing to stand up to Trump, as he's called them personally and pressured them. And they've said no. Georgia's governor, Brian Kemp, you know, has repeatedly, and the Secretary of State, both Republicans, have repeatedly refused to go along with what Trump wants. And I think that has emboldened some more national public politicians. You know, again, they're not, I wouldn't say they're exactly profiles in courage for the most part, since they're largely staying silent or saying these sorts of things quite late. But Trump, you know, Trump isn't getting as much support, I think, as he would like.
We'll leave it there. Amanda, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Amanda Turkel is Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost. She joined us for The Week in Washington to talk about negotiations for government spending and coronavirus relief, the latest on President-elect Biden's cabinet appointments, and other top stories in national politics.